Is it time to shut Stormont? The Assembly has been mothballed since January 2017. That's almost 3 years. And within that time, our politicians have been able to get an agreement over the line and get power sharing back up and running. The political journalist Alex Kane is with us this morning. Good morning to you, Alex.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. And the editor of Slugger O'Toole, Mick Fielty. Good morning to you, Mick.
Hi, Stephen.
Good morning. So, Alex, you've been writing that you don't think it may be possible to get an agreement at all.
Yes, and when I say shut down Stormont, it was no sense of hurrah, shut it down, it's been a total and utter failure. It's just the sense, a creeping sense I've had for years, that the one thing we needed most in an agreement was a willingness on both sides, a willingness of both communities, or the majority of both communities, to actually want to work together, to cooperate together, to move ahead together. And I gave it a lot of time, Stephen. I, as you know, I had difficulty with aspects of the Good Friday Agreement back in 1998. But for me, it was a moment that had never existed in my lifetime. I believed for a number of years afterwards that we needed to keep on to see if we could do it, to see if it was possible, to keep on giving it one more chance. The problem is, Stephen, how many more chances do you give this? And how many more times do you say to these people, can you sit down and make an agreement? How many more times do they come up with excuses for not doing it? And I'm not saying it's the individual fault of any political party. I'm not saying, well, if that party was removed, everything would be hunky-dory. That is not the truth. But I am simply saying that we have to ask what I think is a very valid question. Is there really the will in political leaderships, in people who vote for political parties, and in the general public for this present? It's almost like to say it as an experiment sounds a bit patronising, but it is. But maybe we just have to say, look, we've tried for 25 years. We started this peace process, Stephen, in 1994, 25 years later, 21 years after the Good Friday Agreement referendum, whatever, 13 years after the St Andrews Agreement. We are still not simply at the same old impasse, with a whole new series of impasses. And that's all I'm saying. Maybe we just have to accept it's not going to work.
And Mick Fielty, I was saying on the radio programme last week, I wonder about your views on this. No matter what happens, no matter how many lives are affected in Northern Ireland through the health service, through education, through scandals, RHI, etc., etc., does it always descend in Northern Ireland at election time to a sectarian headcount? Is that where we're at in Northern Ireland? Is that the totality of our ability to rate politics and determine how we vote?
Look, I think the media have to take some responsibility for this, Stephen. I know you do cover policy issues, although if I might say so more directly, you do tend to get involved at the crisis end rather than in terms of pinning the parties to the back of their collar over what it is they plan to do to fix the thing. I don't agree with Alex quite profoundly in the sense that we tend, in Northern Ireland, we tend to catastrophize everything. We look at everything after a crisis has hit, and then we ignore all the stuff that happened when actually things were kind of moving. Now, they weren't moving efficiently, and there are reforms needed, I think, to bring Stormont back. But if you don't have a democratic institution where the politicians are expected to work to try and fix some of these issues, then, as the old saying says, the devil makes work for idle hands. And I cannot think of a more idle political class than we have at the moment. Closing it down, however, would be a really, really big mistake.
Is there any realistic prospect of Stormont being closed down?
No, I don't think so. But in terms of opposing Alex's logic, this is very briefly how I think the problem is. We've seen from the Brexit debacle what happens when you go into a big idea, i.e. let's leave the European Union, but you don't have a plan to prosecute that. You can't close the institutions down if you don't have something else in its place. That's the lesson of Brexit. What we need to do is to get these politicians back around the table and say, right, some of you are going to pay some penalty here if you continue to boycott this place. And maybe some reform that prevents the institutions from collapsing just at the whim of one particular party, in this case, Sinn Féin, not anybody else. Sinn Féin are the ones who are refusing to take up their job as deputy first.
Well, is that too easy, Mick, to say?
No, it's not. It's simple, but it's not easy.
Well, how can you load all of the blame onto Sinn Féin?
Because they're the ones who are refusing to take up their job as Deputy First Ministers. This is exceptional, Stephen. There is no other part of the United Kingdom or the democratic part of Europe. You know, we can go to Ukraine and we can go to other parts of Eastern Europe where things are not quite so democratic. Go to Turkey even, where you see the rule of law being completely suspended. When people are take votes off their electors, they're obliged to take on the obligations of the institutions. And I'm afraid if you get top dog, you are obliged to take on the responsibility of DFM. You can't just shirk it and close the place down for 3 years. Well, however justified you may feel in taking that, what is extreme? It's an extreme action. It only doesn't look extreme because we've got used to it and we've accommodated to it. What do they say around Trump? Don't normalise it. Well, we have normalised the extraordinary and the abnormal.
Alex, what do you think the Northern Irish public actually want? Do you think they want in their different communities politicians who will stand up individually for those different communities and represent the nationalist side, the unionist side, whatever? Or do you feel or sense any type of significant groundswell where someone wants a leader to come from somewhere who is big enough, charismatic enough to unite this country?
Well, I think they do need that charisma. I think they need someone. It can't just be from one side. It has to be from both sides.
But is that not a vote winner in this country? One-sided politics. Stop them getting in. Vote for me.
Well, that's the problem, Steve. And it's because right from the beginning there was a hope that somehow, and it turned out to be a forlorn hope. But I'm not embarrassed or ashamed to have said I tried and voted for it. Hoped that the best would happen for it. And part of it was that somehow we would be able to find, by putting all the parties in government together, round an executive, getting them to take responsibility for health and education and all the other nitty-gritty bits of government, that in doing that, that in creating a programme for government, that in doing the priorities that mattered, not just at a constituency or party political level, but for the collective good of Northern Ireland, that somehow out of all that, almost a miracle, that people will go, look, can we not just park that, the constitutional question. Put it down, find somewhere to do. Let's see what we can do here. Let's see if it is actually possible to make Northern Ireland work. Because I think I've told you this story before, Stephen. A few years ago when we were having the miscarriages and things like that, I was in hospitals quite a lot. People used to come up to me, sometimes just sitting and having a cup of tea in the canteen up at the Donald Hospital. And people would come up to me and just say, Mr. Kane, look, is it not, could they not just do something about this hospital? My wife's been waiting here for months. My son's in here. And I remember one guy just telling me, and it was just a great line, Stephen, stuck with me ever since. He just said, Mr. Kane, cancer is no respecter of religion or politics. It hits anyone, anytime, any age, any circumstance. We need to be focusing on what we can collectively fix. And that's what it was supposed to be all about. And Mickey's right in one sense.
And this is all great from you, Alex. No problem at all. But are you actually telling me that for those politicians that wave the flag and the colour of the flag, keep the DUP out, keep Sinn Féin out, protect the union, bring on a united Ireland, the sectarian head count that there sometimes is in Northern Ireland, are you telling me that's not a vote winner?
It is a vote winner, and that's my problem.
There you go. And who do you blame for that then?
I'm saying that is my problem, that back in 1998, between 94 and 98, I actually thought there was a moment. I thought there was a moment we could break through the old ways of doing politics. My sense now, and I know I'm naturally pessimistic, Stephen, but my sense now is, Stephen, that no matter what the situation is, we can, and I can understand that because the Good Friday Agreement didn't bring an end to anything in one sense. I shouldn't say other than that, let's just like, throw that away, that was important. But it left the key question unsettled, United Kingdom versus United Ireland. So for both, when you were your unionist, if your identity matters more than anything else, you will vote unionist. If you're a nationalist and a United Ireland identity matters more than anything. And even when sometimes you don't agree with the political parties representing you in some socio-moral issues or economic issues, you will still somehow ineluctably be drawn to vote the way you have always voted. And I do not know how we get around that. See, just one other point, because I agree with Mick about the, you know, I wasn't just saying simply we'll just close it tomorrow. I was saying have a series of talks, see if it is possible. But if we reach the point after months and months of negotiation of somebody saying, look, it is not possible to cross these bridges, let alone build the bridges, then maybe we just have to accept the fact that this process, as it stands, is incapable of delivering. That's all I'm saying.
Here's the first call of the day. Brian, morning, Brian.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, I think the people deserve to know what happened at the last round of talks. I don't know, they lasted for 4 or 5 weeks. Now, if they were close to some agreement, well and good, let them talk more. If it was just a talking shop, then forget about it. Because to me, if it was just a talking shop, they're making fools of people here. They're playing politics with people's lives. There's lots of things need to be done here. The major things, obviously, the hospitals, the roads and so forth. But there's loads, there must be loads of other things land in Stormont that need to be signed off by a minister. And they're land there in a cupboard somewhere on for the help of people on both sides of the divide to keep this country moving. And if there's no sense of movement, no sense of movement at all...
Then what? Then what?
Direct rule. That's the only alternative.
Like, Mick Fielty, do you think that people listening to this programme this morning, that their lives would change at all if Stormont was up and running again?
Yes, potentially. But not unless the media start asking all of the political parties, what are they going to do about the perilous state of the Dundonald Hospital?
Come on, we do ask. You know that the media, you're among the media, you are the media as well as any of the rest of us. You know that we ask these questions.
Well, I don't think it's given the prominence it should have done. Now, you look at that banner that some glape in North Belfast put up. Arbitrarily, nothing to do with any of the political parties fighting the election. It was deliberately put up to stir the sectarian pot.
Which banner are you talking about?
We're talking the one in North Belfast. You know, making all kinds of accusations. That's hijacked the news agenda for about 24 hours, 36 hours. Why are we talking about the renewal?
Well, that banner, which is a smear campaign against an election candidate, we have asked the DUP, are they specifically prepared to condemn it? And we've had silence back from the DUP as to our specific question.
Why does that usurp asking the DUP and Sinn Féin about the terrible state of Dundonald Hospital? I don't know what the Mater's like. I haven't been in there for years. I don't know what the Royal Victoria's like. Last time I was in Dundonald, there was... I wouldn't say there was paint peeling off the outside, but it looked very dilapidated from the time I was there 30 or 40 years before, when it was a new hospital. Now if you allow a small sectarian story like that to usurp the proper questioning about what these parties would do when they get in, there is no incentive for them to do
anything. And Mick, this isn't, and I know you're not trying for it to be like this. This is not... a programme about the media today, but we did focus on a major way, actually, on one of our programmes last week, focusing on the holding to account the political parties in Northern Ireland, and it was their decision to actually not bring parity to nurses and medical professionals' pay in Northern Ireland. And when we're talking about nursing strikes in Northern Ireland, and some of these political parties are supporting the strikes, the very same political parties in Northern Ireland who did not give the nurses, support the nurses getting a pay rise in Northern Ireland when they could have done. That's what we were doing last week.
No, I get that, Stephen. I'm not making a singular accusation against you. I've said already that you do policy issues. What I'm saying is that more generally, that a story that is about a billboard that's been put up by some person or persons unknown and pushing health, infrastructure, all the rest of it out of the road, if we keep doing that, we're going to keep coming back to the same old hard road. And with no old dog to run it. And you've got a new generation of political politicians coming through, but, and they're all being asked about the same old question from about events.
But do we have any different voting instincts from a new generation of the electorate? Are they going to continue to vote orange and green just like their forefathers?
Well, if we keep talking about banners in North Belfast, of course, because everybody feels deeply emotional about this stuff, it brings up fear. Not least the fear that we're going backwards rather than forwards. And I think at least at some point, these politicians need to be asked before they get back into office what it is they plan to do about nurses' pay, but also about the dilapidated state of the hospital estate. How sustainable is it to have all of these hospitals? What's the ask from Whitehall? How much more money do we need to fix these problems? And this is all replicated in roads infrastructure.
Big time.
And in schools.
I get it.
We have too many schools, and nobody has the wherewithal or the nerve to close those schools that need to be closed.
I hear you. But no matter how many times that questions are asked of these political parties, look, one of the biggest stories in recent times in Northern Ireland has been RHI. One of the most explosive stories in Northern Ireland. Are people going to vote based on their views on that?
Or they, I think they do. Well, if you look right back to the last Assembly election in 2017, the DUP were given a kicking by their own people, not by Nationalists. Well, Nationalists, yes. Nationalists were incentivized to come out. Unionists basically felt, how dare you? And they withdrew. Now, what they did is they gave themselves a scare because then the sort of the sectarian response on the other side, if you like, to that created another sectarian response. So by June, in the same year, the DUP's vote went up. But we can tic-tac like this forever. But it isn't going to fix Dundonald Hospital, and it's not going to fix the Royal. And schools are continually running along with these cuts and head teachers having to make do.
Yeah.
And nobody ever puts these guys
Could I come in
their collar about how they're going to fix it.
Who's that wanting to come in?
That was me. It's Alex again.
Sorry, Alex.
Just on Mick's point, I agree with him. He's absolutely right that we should be prioritising health and education. And that's what I wrote in the article. It's what I've written. Mick will know. He's seen me at some of his events. I've said the same thing. The parties need to prove in advance of an election, in advance of going and asking for voter approval. They need to say, we have a programme for government. Here it is that we will all collect. We don't know which party will be which minister until we've got the election. But when we get those departments, when we get the executive up and running, this is the programme. This is what we have collectively.
Is this not wishful thinking? Do the parties not just need to wave the flag, Alex, and they will get the votes?
We don't have to help them, Steve.
That's the dilemma. That's what I'm saying. That in one hand, in the whole idea of the 1998 agreement, apart from trying to get peace and stop it killing each other, was that somehow we would then find a new way of doing government and doing politics.
Now, in relation.
You might be right. Maybe it will. Maybe my pessimism is correct in this one. It may never ever be possible to cross the bridge in enough numbers to make decisions without reverting orange and green. It may not be possible anymore.
In relation to the banners that were erected in North and South Belfast that Mick referred to, the DUP is a party which positions itself as of the community. The DUP yesterday, through a spokesperson, were saying that they were unaware of those banners. Now, how on earth is the DUP, as a political party in Northern Ireland, with these banners being widely talked about in the media and on social media, and the DUP are publicly saying that they are unaware of the matter? Their statement said, "We're unaware of the matter. If it has been reported to the police, then anyone with information should help their inquiries. The DUP consistently condemns violence or anyone inciting hatred. Will Sinn Féin now condemn those behind the many Provisional IRA murders in North Belfast?" So we've gone back as a programme to the DUP and said, hold on a minute, we're not talking here about some type of wide subject area. We're not talking about and the IRA. Are you specifically prepared to openly condemn those banners in North and South Belfast, which is smearing an election candidate? And so far we've had silence from that political party, Mick.
Yeah, well, but what's any of this to do with health, schools and the future of Northern Ireland? I mean, yes, I understand it will have caused offence to a political candidate, but bless my soul, a political candidate puts himself up in the public domain, and some of his opponents in the opposing community, and that is almost a ridiculous thing to say anywhere else, because nowhere else in democracy do people act as communities around political parties, but in Northern Ireland, and particularly in North Belfast, they do, and it makes some accusations. I've seen worse black ops happen in Belfast that never appeared on the media, not even once. But the point is that as we're talking about the controversy and one party's inability to explain how this has happened in their community, we're missing the opportunity to get dug into them about what are they going to do about the school estate? What are they going to do about hospitals? What are they going to? I'm sorry to keep coming back to it, but for me, it's a richer territory to talk about how they're going to change. And here's the key thing, right? The thing about that banner is it sets one part of North Belfast against another. Probably the most, the part of Northern Ireland that took the most damage during the Troubles, who are most traumatised by this stuff on both sides. And yet, things like schools and hospitals require joint action because they are joint facilities that we all rely upon. And with regard to schools, the interesting thing, my old alma mater, St. Patrick's, as we used to call it, Our Ladies in St. Patrick's, is it now, first Catholic school to play in the Schools Cup, a senior rugby, and they, by all accounts, put up a great fight. That's extraordinary. That is 100,000 miles away from the experience I had going there in the late 70s, going to a Catholic school with Ballybean Estate, just on the periphery of the school. We have moved centuries in the last 20 years, and yet we're reluctant to kind of take the obvious step, which is instead of bringing everything down to what separates us, what do we need to do to fix things that we all depend on? And that's where the unity of purpose can arise from. But only if we give it time in the media, on shows like your own, Steve, and I know it doesn't get people's blood boiling to kind of talk about what they might agree on.
No, I disagree. Actually, it does. When you talk, I can tell you now, Mike, that we are, you know, we are inundated with contact from the public when we talk about waiting lists.
Yes.
When we talk about all of those other issues that you want us to do more on. But the bottom line is, when it then comes to election time, I am posing the question to both you and Alex and everyone else listening this morning, mm-hmm. that maybe actually, and as much as this is going to feel uncomfortable to people, maybe them waiting for their mum to get a heart operation isn't as important as throwing mud at the other side based on someone's religion or politics when it comes to election time. Maybe the education of their child isn't as important as hurting the bogeyman Sinn Féin or hurting the bogeyman DUP.
Well, it's easier because you don't have to do any work to do it. You just have to find something that's going to wind your own team up against the other team. And then, of course, then that gets their juices going. It's easy because it's what we've always done. But I think what we've seen, particularly I think from the DUP and Sinn Féin, who've been in leadership positions now for over 10 years, and if you go right back to the St Andrews Agreement, which is more than 10 years ago, they've been in the political, they've been the people who the government's talked to. They've, as somebody said on Slugger, on a comment on Slugger, just said, they're looking stale. They're just, they don't have any other ideas. So just tweaking the sectarian tail is about the only thing they've got left.
But Stephen, that sort of makes the point I've been making in the article, Mick. I agree with you that people should be concerned about it. People should want to move to the next stage, but there is something always drags them back. And the key thing, Mick, is it's their choice. It is their choice. If people really were reacting against this, if there were people in Sinn Féin, the DUP, other parties who actually thought that health was a priority, that health trumped, you know, their identity, that the education of their kids trumped their identity, that better job opportunities trumped their identity, then that they would not be voting for those parties. They would take. They have other options. They choose not to take those options, and that's my problem.
Here's Pat Normand. Let me bring on Pat. I want to come back to you about another thing, Alex, just before you go this morning. But Pat, morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Go ahead.
My point is, if everybody that doesn't vote, I don't know what percentage of people that don't vote in these elections, but I am sick and tired of people talking about the orange and green issue. Mm. If everybody was to go out and vote for the DUP, Sinn Féin, DUP, or the UUP, or the SDLP, and vote for the Lands or the Greens or whatever, and if they got into power, you know what I mean, they would have the majority. Or does it have to be an orange and green instalment?
It doesn't have to
be. That's my point.
It doesn't have to be orange and green, but it still has to be under the terms of the Good Friday Agreement and the subsequent St Andrews Agreement. It has to be made up of communities. People have to, unless you change the whole how you identify it, it's still orange, nationalist, unionist, other. So yes, you might have a bigger other bloc, but you're still going to have in that executive, you're still going to have representatives of nationalists and unionism, and they will still have veto powers. They will still be able to say, we don't want to do this, and we're not going to do this.
Well, Pat, let me ask you, what's most important to you in this election? What issue is most important to you? What would attract you most? And I think I should put that question out to our wider listener base this morning. So what is the top issue for you that would make you vote for a political party in Northern Ireland? And be honest about it this morning. What is it?
Well, I am being honest about it, so it was.
So what is it for you?
I was brought up as a Catholic. And I always thought that voting for your own kind was the way to go forward. Because it was a bit indie as a child. Like, I was brought up through the Troubles. I was stopped along the road miles of time. So I was took out of the car, dragged out of the car, searched all because of my name. But that's not what I'm trying to say now is...
So tell me what the most important issue is to you ahead of this election, Pat. What is it?
I tell you what it is. It's quite simple. If you have to vote for people... I thought that Lance Party was mixed, both Protestant
and... You're not telling me what issue. Is there an issue that... You see, are you part of the problem or the solution?
No,
what is it?
I am not part
of
the problem.
So have you got any issue? Have you got any issue in your life that you would be testing a political party about rather than orange and green?
Yes, there is.
What is it?
Schools, health, roads, you name it.
What specifically? That's too broad, mate. Is there anything in your life where you're thinking and you've thought about it and you've thought to yourself, I'm putting it to you that the answer is no, you haven't?
Well, I have thought about it.
So what is it?
It's quite simple. You want to be able to go out in the morning and walk. If people need to go to health and make sure that you can get to the hospital, get an appointment. And this orange and green thing goes on and on and on all the time. It has to stop. And the only way to stop is for people to go out and vote for a Lance. And Lance are both Catholic and Protestant. Let them go and let them take over. And let everybody else turn around and say that, no, we don't want orange. No, we don't want green. We want a government that would govern us the way we want governed. Get orange and green out completely.
Stephen, can I finish on an optimistic note?
Yeah.
Just because Alex has posed himself as the eternal pessimist, I'm the eternal optimist on this. And what Pat has just said there, he has given you a bunch of things. He's given you a bunch of policy issues. What he said there that was really worth listening to, two things. One, it's about people who want to go out to work. It's about people who want to have a better life for their children. And any political party that can serve those ends of Pat or some other Billy somewhere, it doesn't matter what their names are, there's an awful lot of people that people have in common. Now, the second thing is this. People like Pat who grew up in a Catholic background and lots of other people who grew up voting unionists are now no longer doing that. Both the nationalist and unionist blocs are shrinking. And it is the growth of that middle ground that should be a signal to the more moderate unionist and nationalist parties that that's where the growth area is. And that is where they need to take the message back into wider unionism and wider nationalism. And it will happen because this extremism of both Sinn Féin and the DUP is leading them to no town. And for me... The inevitability of that is that over the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see a shift in fortunes here because people will just eventually get fed up of having to make these stupid choices.
Well, or will they get fed up of not having things delivered for them in terms of education and health and roads, but at election time, will they vote as they always have? And that's one of the central questions this morning.
Well, can I go back there, Stephen Kenner?
Yes, Pat.
It's quite simple. As I'm saying, people, doesn't matter whether orange or green, will vote orange and green. It's not because it's drummed into them. So that it is they've been no age. But if the people that don't vote would go out and vote for any of the other parties other than the four I've mentioned, will they not be able to walk in the storm and say, right, we have power. We are both orange and green. We do not represent orange or green.
Well, those political parties, those big main four that you're talking about, including the DUP and Sinn Féin, they would, of course, very strongly argue that they have a whole plethora of policies on all of the issues across the board, health, Stephen, education, and rights and all that. Hold on one second, Pat, because Alex Kane, before we go to the news this morning, I wanted to ask you about something else you talked about in an Irish Times article in which you talked about the Sinn Féin and SDLP pact. Now, they say there is no pact. You're describing it as a pact. You say that this will not lead to stopping Brexit. But what will it lead to, in your view, Alex?
I think, what the point I was trying to make there was that it isn't just a Remain versus Leave pact, and it isn't even a pact in the normal sense. I think it is a pact, an understanding which helps both Sinn Féin and the SDLP on a bigger agenda, and that is a bigger agenda of hitting unionism again. I don't mean that in the violence, as I just mean taking an electoral lump out of unionism, and I think that's they've seen an opportunity which didn't exist 2 or 3 years ago electorally, and I said that's why it's extraordinary. I was one of the few people who said, look, let's not dismiss the possibility that on this occasion Sinn Féin, the SDLP, maybe even the Alliance, maybe the Greens will get together and they will hang it on something, but it will have two purposes. It'll have a Brexit purpose, but it will have a bigger purpose.
And I know, Alex, you're talking about the bigger parties, but you know, if you look at the Green Party, so they've agreed to stand aside the candidates in this election. Is Brexit more important to them than their policies on the environment, on climate change? There's a question for them, and when they're on, I'll ask them.
Well, it is. I don't know. I can't give the answer, because they've stood in seats where they have absolutely no chance at all, I would have thought. But I think, yes, in this case, they have said that for them, Brexit is a much bigger... That is a policy of the National Greens as well. And I think they have bought into that. And it also... They want to see, you know, I don't think in their case it's a case of damaging or hitting the DUP. I think we actually want to send a message about Brexit and Northern Ireland. But it's worth saying, Stephen, my other point in the Irish Times was that even if Claire Hanlon is elected, even if there's a majority of Remain elected from Northern Ireland, if Boris Johnson gets a majority, in essence, there's nothing they can do about it.
Alex Kane, McFeely, thank you. Loads of calls on this morning, 03030 80 55 55. So are those bread and butter issues that affect your life, are they going to drive you to how you vote? Should it be orange and green that is the most important thing to you? Maybe it is. And just for absolute clarity, I kept on talking about during the programme earlier this morning about the question that the Nolan Show had put into the DUP that met with silence. I just want you all to know what this question is and how simple it might have been to answer it. And the question to the DUP headquarters was as follows. Does Nigel Dodds, the candidate for North Belfast, condemn the banners that have been erected about John Finucane and his family? And that has been met with silence from the DUP, that specific question from the Nolan Show. Morning, Robert.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, first of all, I'd like to comment on the original subject you were talking about, and then I want to pull you up on something. First of all, you turn around and you ask, would it be better without storm and close it down? Yes, it should be closed down, and we should go to the rack row. For one party, Sinn Féin, don't want it to work. They're full steam ahead on United Ireland at the moment. They don't want Northern Ireland to work or go against what they're fighting for in United Ireland. They had their Ardèche on Saturday, and 99% of it was conducted in English. Yet they keep this country without health and without a government for an Irish language act that they can't even speak themselves. And I want to pull you up, Stephen, on you've attacked the DUP twice this morning. First of all, you brought RHI into it, saying that's a scandal and will people still vote the DUP?
No, I didn't say that.
Yes, you did.
No,
you
did not. That is misleading the listeners to suggest that I said that.
What did you say?
At no time did I say, will people vote for the DUP based upon
you
RHI?
You said, will people still vote even though the big RHI scandal? Yes,
I did.
You did.
And I didn't mention the DUP once when I asked that.
Well,
don't be putting words
in
my mouth.
RHI scandal,
Sinn Féin was also involved in RHI, as were other parties at committee level. So if you're going to throw something at me, get it right.
Well, that is right, Stephen.
It's not right. You misquoted me, didn't you?
On the bandwagon. The RHI scandal is always about the DUP. It's always about the DUP. So it is. You never mentioned Sinn Féin. Maybe once or twice you mentioned Sinn Féin when it's RHI scandal. We all know who you're talking about when you mention the RHI scandal. So we do. We all know. And the point I would make to you is, if you're going to say that there about the RHI scandal, why don't you turn around and Let the people know. And ask Republican voters why they still vote Sinn Féin when they're still being told what to do by the IRA Army Council. Why don't you ask them why they still vote Sinn Féin? A party who supported terrorist murders for years and years, and people still supported them. Why don't you ask that question of the people?
I think you'll find if you look at last week's programme, it was this programme that asked many questions around Sean Kelly canvassing for Sinn Féin. Have you forgotten about that?
No, I haven't forgot about
and
that.
And him rapping doors. So people selectively start suggesting a bias,
Stephen,
when the Nolan
selective.
Show. When you look at this programme, actually, we get flack from all sides because we cover all stories.
Yes, you
Let's
do.
Not get
and
into this.
Yes, you do. And I accept that. I accept that. But you, and then you go again about a banner. Nobody mentioned a banner apart from your mum, Mick, and then it came up about your asking the DUP. What about the smear campaign Sinn Féin's had for years on the unionist community, the Orange Order, the British Army, the RUC? What about them smear campaigns?
Sinn Féin would deny that those are smear campaigns.
What are they then? RUC men with orange collarettes and all on. What's that there if it's not a smear campaign, Steve? Stop trying to stick up for them.
Do you think, Robert, it is important, and this is an open question, do you think it is important for people to vote at this election based upon protecting the two big parties who would present themselves as protecting the union or bringing a united Ireland even closer, or are the life issues like health and education just as important or not for now, or can you do both at the same time?
Obviously, I think you have to do both at the same time. Everything is important. Health, education, all of it is important to
right.
the people.
And do you
all
honestly think, Robert,
do
you honestly think, as Mick Fieldy posed the question this morning as well, do you honestly think that the public ahead of voting at this election are standing back and thinking to themselves, right, now let's evaluate what Sinn Féin, the DUP, Alliance, SDLP, Ulster Unionists, Greens, whoever, TUV, whoever, let's evaluate what they've actually come up with in terms of improving our health in Northern Ireland, of getting a 70-year-old that can't afford private care down that waiting list before they die, of improving the security for people in care homes so they don't get abused and neglected, as some of them have done in Northern Ireland under a local devolution's watch, of getting nurses and doctors' pay parity with the rest of the UK, which happened under our executive in Northern Ireland. Do you think people are actually taking that on board before they vote?
Well, Stephen, I can't speak for our people, but for myself, I said at the start of this conversation that I thought it should be back to direct rule, because I don't think they're fit to government. I told you last week that you need people involved in health, in charge of health, not people who has been voted in off the street because they don't know what they're doing, and that's just fact.
Robert,
but
thank
the
point
you. Is, sorry.
Thank you, mate. Ken in Hollywood. Morning, Ken.
Good morning, Stephen.
Morning.
I tend to agree with Alex Kane. No matter what you say or do, you will never remove the unionists want to stay in the United Kingdom, and the Republicans and Nationalists want to United Ireland, and they will always vote that way. And can you give me one good reason why Sinn Féin would want to return to Stormont and make Stormont work and make Northern Ireland PLC a better place?
Well, I can give you an argument that supporters of Sinn Féin would make, which is that it is their electorate, their families, they themselves, which are living in Northern Ireland, experiencing the public services, availing of the public services. Why on earth would they not want Northern Ireland to work if this is where they live?
Stephen, they spent 50, 40 years murdering and bombing and killing their own people.
Well, Sinn Féin didn't.
They still, yeah, well, Sinn Féin represented the people that did do it, and they still got to vote. So the desire for United Ireland is worth more than health, education, anything else, and vice versa. The unionist side, the Remain British, is worth more than all that. And that's the way it will always be. So the only way you can fix the health service is go use the direct rule and then put proper ministers from England over here to run our hospitals. That's the only way forward. You'll never get Sinn Féin to make Northern Ireland work. It's against their principles.
And Albert. Morning, Albert.
Good morning, Stephen. Stephen, I just listened to two callers who have basically what I would say to you this morning. You know, you keep saying about the two big parties, but the problem we have is we have a party in Sinn Féin, as you've heard this morning, don't want Northern Ireland to work. All they're interested in is advancing their cause for United Ireland. And from 1998, when the Belfast Agreement was signed, or didn't, Sinn Féin never signed it, they seen it as a process to a United Ireland, where the unionists seen it as a settlement. And now unionists basically see that they've got nothing out of the Belfast Agreement. And that's why we're in this situation today, because Sinn Féin have this goal for a United Ireland, will do anything. And you said about the Catholic community and the health and the education, they're prepared to take what they have with the waiting lists and everything else, education not being funded right, because they're supporting Sinn Féin and the IRA on their quest for a United Ireland. They're prepared to take that. But what has happened in the unionist community since 98 is...
Well, there's a difference between supporting Sinn Féin and supporting the IRA, of course.
If you take the 30 years of the Troubles, a lot of the Catholic community...
But why aren't you talking about now?
But the thing is, this is what's wrong with your programme. And I listen to Alex Kane and your other commentator.
McFeely.
He's never mentioned why we're in this position where Sinn Féin is concerned. Why do we not have Stormont? Because they want to advance their cause for United Ireland. That's why they're staying out of. Why do they want an Irish Language Act? To advance their cause for United Ireland. That's what they're working at. This is why we're in the position we are today. And what the unionists, and I've been to a few of these meetings that have been taking place in the unionist community, and their feeling is they basically see now enough's enough. And that's why you've got these banners up, because as your previous caller said, you see the attack on the unionist community. We've seen it with the residence groups over the parades. We've seen it on other things, our Britishness, taking down the flags. All this kind of thing is getting really to the unionist community.
And the question I'm asking, you're saying the unionist community have enough, right? But the question I'm asking this morning is, when that unionist community has a baby born within the unionist community prematurely, and that baby is fighting for its life, it is the state and resources that you give the NHS will depend as to whether that baby, be it unionist, nationalist, green or orange, Indian, Hindu, Protestant, Catholic, it will be the resources that we as Northern Ireland PLC give that premature baby that will determine its life chances. Go to the other end of life. And someone at 80 years of age or 90 years of age with dementia. It will be a local minister here that will possibly be able to influence the standard of life at the end of life that someone has, be it that they have dementia or they're sitting in a care home. And we've seen in recent times, as I keep on banging on about how elderly people, and I make no apology for being repetitive around this, have died in excruciating pain because the right protections have not been put in place by Northern Ireland PLC to protect you at your end of life. And it doesn't matter whether you're Catholic, Protestant, British or Irish when you're dying in pain.
Stephen, let me say to you, the unionist community want a government to Stormont.
And you default back in, no matter how much I go on about those other life stuff, you default back into the unionist community. When I'm trying to talk about all of us.
Yes, that works for everybody. But what we have is a problem we have is Sinn Féin's attitude of this United Ireland. And they will use anything. And I'll just give you an example about the Catholic community. Catholic community, you don't hear anybody from the Catholic community crying about, basically, yes, they'll come on to your show and they'll say about the health service and education and all that. But in the bottom line is they're supporting and they're voting for Sinn Féin, who are keeping Stormont closed. and that they can't get a minister for health, can't get a minister for education. That is the problem that you have. Don't name anybody else.
Well, Sinn Féin would argue. Sinn Féin would argue that they are holding out so that the rights
holding out
of
what?
Minority groups. Well, holding out
for a united Ireland. That's, and they're using Brexit as well as an excuse. And you talk about, as I said to you about the banners, this is a reaction to what is happening. It's about time you people woke up.